So I have the privilege of speaking to you this morning, and for those of you who have been reading the Bible in Four Seasons, yesterday's reading is one we're going to be talking about today. So in my Bible, it's titled Going to War, so I thought that was an applicable title for this morning's sermon. As you know, my background is military, so I was quite interested when I saw the title Going to War. So it is not, though, about what you may think. It is not about a physical war, but I want to talk about the spiritual war that each one of us is engaged in every day. Trying to get away from this echo. So the background of this passage, it's talking about when the Israelites are going into the Promised Land, and they actually have to go to war to get some of the land that God had promised them. But I think it's equally applicable to us today, and it's been used in other passages in the New Testament to talk about the spiritual war that we're engaged in. And for me, I don't know about you, but I have sometimes not gone to war for God. There are things that He asks us to do. He asks us to be salt and light in the world, to be honest, to be truthful about, you know, life, about the things He says are right and wrong. And sometimes I know I haven't done that. So to give you an illustration of that, I couldn't think of a better one except my seminary experience. So I'm almost done, thank goodness, but thinking back to my first class, my very first class at Fuller Seminary, I had an Old Testament class that the professor, let's just say, is not on the same theological plane as me. His doctorate, you know, in ancient Near East studies, told him that much of the stories that we hold dear, the creation story, the Noah and the flood, the Exodus even, which is what our passage discusses today, and even the movement into the Promised Land, all of it was myth and none of it was really true and most of it was made up, is what he tried to teach us. And needless to say, I didn't agree with that. I hold them very dear. For anybody who knows me knows I love the Old Testament. Some of my greatest heroes are from the Old Testament, King David and Joshua. My wife's favorite is Joshua. And I love those stories. I hold them very dear. I think we all have a lot to learn from them. And he would say these things, and I didn't really speak up because I don't know about any of you, but disagreeing with your teacher usually doesn't reflect well in your grade. It was my first class for my master's degree, and I was a little bit nervous about what I could and could not say, so I didn't really say much. And what I did say was very little. I didn't really push back on him, and nobody really did, because for many of us, it was our first class. Come to find out a year or two later, having talked to some of those students, some other students were feeling the same way, and none of us, you know, took the courage to speak up. Not in a mean way, but just a way that says, you know, maybe that's not right. You know, maybe we should look at what the Bible actually says about what's written in it and go off of that and not what archaeologists say or our opinions. You know, there's a lot of wrong thinking about what happened in history, and I think we best trust what the Bible has to say. So I have since tried to be a little more truthful and speak up. I learned from that class that if you don't speak up when God prompts you to speak up, it's like fire in your bones. That's what Prophet Jeremiah said when he was told to speak up for God. He was like the only one who seemed to want what God wanted in his day, and he had to keep speaking up for God and telling people things they didn't want to hear. Israel was engaged in all kinds of wrong idolatry and the bad behavior, and Jeremiah had all these things that God told him to do, really like bad things like eat, you know, off of poop and all kinds of stuff. It was really bad. Read the book. It's great. But Jeremiah said it the best, I think, that it's like fire in his bones, that if he didn't speak up, he couldn't contain it. That's what it feels like. Has anybody else felt like that sometimes when especially Christians or people who claim to be Christian say things that are just wrong? I mean, they're just not biblical. That's what I'd like to talk about a little bit today, and what that means. And that's what I'm saying is about going to war. That's what I mean when I say that. It's every day we're engaged in a spiritual war, and we have to choose, just like the Israelites. Are we going to go to war for God, or are we going to shrink back in fear and and cowardice. And so I'm going to talk about what Israel did and what maybe we should try to avoid. And that the passage this morning that we read from Deuteronomy, I'm going to focus mostly on the first four verses, and then a couple after that. But that passage, we're going to read again. I want you to notice in that passage what it says about God, what it says about our enemies, and just think about how we might apply that to our lives today. Would you just read with me? It's up on the screen, or you can find it in Deuteronomy 20. When you go to war against your enemies and see horses and chariots and an army greater than yours, do not be afraid of them, because the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt, will be with you. When you are about to go into battle, the priest shall come forward and address the army. He shall say, "Hear, Israel, today you are going into battle against your enemies. Do not be faint-hearted or afraid. Do not panic or be terrified of them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies, to give you victory." So, to give you some perspective on the book. So Deuteronomy literally means second law. So there's a lot of debate, and my Old Testament professor would tell you it was written, you know, like not even that long ago, in their captivity in Babylon. I don't agree with that at all. Deuteronomy is cataloging not only the retelling of the law that was given earlier to Moses right after their exodus and once they got to Mount Sinai, but it also is talking about, has a little bit more in there about right before Israel is going into the promised land. And that's what this passage comes from. This passage is talking about literally right before they're about to go into the promised land, Moses is giving them a pep talk. So it's like he's going before, he says, the priest will go before you and remind you that God is going with you. This is interesting because that talk of this priest who will come before them, this is the first instance we see of chaplaincy, which, if you know, I'm trying to become a chaplain. So this, we actually talked about this in chaplain school. This is the first instance of any record that we can find talking about what a chaplain does. We go before the troops and you try to pep them up. You know, you give them a talk that says, hey, God's going to be with you. You know, don't be afraid. You know, it's okay. So that's what this passage, one of the things this passage is talking about there. But it's also talking about, even though the armies you're going to face are more numerous than you, even though they're greater than you, this passage specifically says horses, chariots, enemies, armies greater. Other passages say people more numerous than you. I think that's a helpful way for us to think about it today, because we're kind of becoming at least outnumbered in this country, at least in many others. In China, for instance, Christians are still outnumbered. You know, many countries, Christians are a minority. And this, I think that's a helpful way for us to think about it, is the people that we may consider enemies in the spiritual sense are always going to be more numerous than us. So this passage really is no different. They were about to go into Canaan, which had all these different tribes who worshipped idols. None of them, you know, believed in Yahweh. And literally, they had an army more numerous than them. They had horses and chariots, and Israel didn't have any of that. They had no horses, no chariots. They're all on feet. You know, they're running around with swords and spears and slings. Anyway, they did not have the same kind of tools that these enemies that they were going to fight had. And some of them were afraid. So what happened before? I'd like to take you back 40 years from where this passage starts. Now this passage is the second time that Israel was supposed to go into, well, they're about to go into the promised land for real. They had a chance before that though. So if you remember, we're going to go back to Exodus and Numbers. And there was a chance for them to go in the promised land the first time. But what happened? Thinking back to the book of Exodus and Numbers, many of the original Israelites, besides Joshua and Caleb, had already died because they refused to go into the promised land. They refused to grasp on to God's promise the first time. Because remember, Israel had the opportunity, right after the Exodus with Moses, to go into the promised land. But they had just spent 40 years wandering the desert until all of that generation had died. And that was by God's command. That was God's punishment for their unbelief and disobedience. This episode is recorded in Numbers 13. I'm not going to read the whole thing, it's pretty long, but we will discuss the highlights. So Moses sent out 12 spies, two of whom were Caleb and Joshua, one from each tribe of Israel. And they were sent into Canaan to spy out the land, which is, I used to be a scout, so they were probably, you know, sneaking around, looking at, you know, recording numbers, how many troops they have, how many, fortresses and whatever else. And they come back and give the report to Moses and the Israelites. All but Caleb and Joshua returned frightened. They all came back and they said, there's too many, we can't deal with them. They have too many forts, they have too many, you know, troops, they have horses and chariots, and how could we ever possibly hope to deal with them on the ground with these, you know, meager swords and spears that we have? And Caleb and Joshua say, you know what, it doesn't matter how many they have, we can take it. Let's go into the promised land, let's take it for God. God's with us. They're nothing to him. So in Numbers 14, we see that the people didn't listen to Caleb and Joshua, but they rebelled. They actually threatened to stone Moses. And then after they threatened to do that, Moses still went to bat for them. He went before God and said, don't kill them, you know, please, like, forgive them. And then they're threatening to go back to Egypt, which is, I mean, they want to go back to the idols, to the slavery that they just were, you know, taken from. God literally sent 10 plagues on Egypt, part of the Red Sea, and led them out of the wilderness by a tornado of fire, and they still want to go back. That's astounding to me. And yet, I remember us today, we still want to go back to our old life, don't we? It's really no different. We become Christian, and then it's so easy to fall back into the old habits. We want to go back to the old way we used to live. So Israel really is just showing us through really extreme means how we live today too. So let's not be too quick to judge them. So what did Moses do? How did he respond to these threats against him? Moses went to bat for them. He begged and pleaded God not to kill them, and he asked them to forgive them for what they've been saying and doing against them. God said in response to Moses in Numbers 14:20-23, Lord replied, I have forgiven them as you asked. Nevertheless, surely as I live, and surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of those who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, verse 23, not one of them will ever see the promised land on oath to their ancestors. Not one who treated me with contempt will ever see it. So because they wouldn't enter into the promised land, God said, okay, you'll never enter in the promised land then. Because you were afraid to go in, because you didn't trust me enough to believe I was going to go with you, I will bring upon you the very thing you feared. Verse 28-29, he said as much. He said, so tell them, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you the very thing I heard you say. In this wilderness, your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old and more, who is counted in the census, who has grumbled against me. So all the generation who came out of Israel, 20 years old and more, all the adults would die in the wilderness because they refused to go into the promised land. Because they refused to go to war for God. You'd think they would take that and go, okay, yeah, we messed up, we'll just, you know, take the punishment and go. No. Uh-uh. Not only did they add insult to injury, you know, to that, they said, oh, well, now we want to go in. Now we want to go to the promised land because, you know, you said we can't. So we're going to disobey you again and add more disobedience to it. So the Israelites were afraid at first, and then when God said you can't go in, then they want to go in. So their lack of faith and fear, their fear and lack of faith in God, they decided they wouldn't go in. And now, because of their disobedience, they want to go into the promised land. So, what fears are you facing today? Like Israel, what fears are preventing you from going into the promised land? Or maybe it might be you're like the post-fear Israel and you want to disobey. Maybe something already happened and you don't want to obey now. What are you not doing, or what should you be doing? What should we be doing to go to war for God today? Well, let's not be like Israel and first be cowards and second, be disobedient. And I'm preaching to the choir, like I already said. I'm already like Israel in my seminary classes. I'm trying to be better about that, but every day we're faced with this choice. It's not like a once and done, like Israel. We actually are faced with these kinds of choices every day. Are you going to go to war for God today? Are you going to speak truth? Are you going to be salt and light? Or are you going to shrink back in fear because you don't like what somebody might say? Israel did that time and time again. It wasn't just Israel that was afraid and didn't trust God. They disobeyed God all the time. And even though God had decreed they would never enter the promised land, at the end of Numbers 14, it tells us Israel changed their mind. Moses told them that God had rejected this generation and would all die in the wilderness. Obviously, they didn't like that much. That's what they were afraid of in the first place. So then they said, oh, never mind. You'll say you'll kill us in the wilderness? Okay, we'll go and fight anyway. Without you, though. So they go without God. They don't even bring the Ark of the Covenant. They go to fight the Amalekites without Moses, without the Ark of the Covenant, without Aaron, without Joshua and Caleb. So God brought the worst fears to fruition because they did not trust him and obey. Remember back in verse 28 when God said, so tell them as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do the very thing I heard you say. So God brought their worst fears upon them because they wouldn't trust him. God brought upon them the worst fear of dying in the wilderness because they would not face the war God had called them to fight. Israel complained the whole way out of Egypt and the whole way into this promised land, and then when they get to the promised land, they refuse to go in. They refuse to go in and enjoy the food, the water, the milk and honey that God had promised them. And they refuse to trust God, who had promised to be with them as they fought these enemies more numerous than them. So just think about it. Why do we fear things in general? Why do we fear either people or why do we fear rejection? It's not because those things are impossible. It's because they're possible, right? We do fear rejection, and it does hurt when people, you know, we lose friends or family. They're not, I mean, we're not being crazy. There's a legitimate fear. So it's not fear so much that we should have a problem with. It's letting fear make us cowards. Letting fear affect what we do. Fear is something that is natural to all of us. It's an emotion. But what we don't want to do is let fear control what we do. We've still been told what to do by God. We've still been told to preach the truth, to be honest. We can't let our fear prevent us from doing what God has called us to do. That's what Israel did wrong. It wasn't being afraid. It's okay to be afraid. We fear loss of our jobs, our homes, friends. We maybe fear disease, like we've been talking about with coronavirus or the flu. We fear those things because, I mean, they're legitimate. They are legitimate fears. However, we can't let them control our lives. Just like Israel, we worry and we fear difficult things and shy away from the war God has called us to fight. Trouble is, without God, we will almost certainly suffer exactly what we fear. With God, we're likely to make it through, or at least God is with us in a difficult time. God is the creator, sustainer, and Lord of the universe. He controls everything. So if God is with us, we really have nothing to fear, right? Even if we go through difficult trials and suffering, God is with us, so it's really not going to be that bad. We know he holds us in the palm of his hand. God protects us, he helps us, he holds on to our souls, and no one can take our soul away from God except ourselves. If we don't trust God, if we reject the mission he has called us to do, we may indeed suffer exactly what we fear, just as God did to Israel. With God, we don't need to fear. But if we disobey him like Israel, if we don't trust him, we are in danger of having God bring upon us the very thing that we fear. Because that is justice. We reaped what we sowed. If we didn't trust him and didn't enter into his promise, we're going to get exactly what we fear. But maybe, just maybe, when God corrects us, maybe that'll be the very thing we need to realize how much we need God. Sometimes God brings upon us things like that to correct us, to remind us how much we need him, and we can repent and move, just like hopefully I will learn from my lesson with seminary. And I hope I'll learn to be truthful and gentle when I talk to people who say things that are incorrect. about the Bible. I think all of us, every day, need to learn how to do that. And even if we mess up, even if we've, at times before, not entered into God's promise and not entered into the war that God has called us to fight, we can still make the choice now to do that. So, as we see in Deuteronomy and in Numbers and Exodus, these promises that God has given Israel to help them and be with them are conditional, you notice. God didn't still let them enter into the promised land with their disobedience. They are conditional. They're conditional upon obedience. They're conditional upon trust and faith. So if you want to enter into God's promise, you need to obey, you need to have faith, you need to trust God. If you don't, as we see with this passage, you may actually bring upon the very things you fear. So listen to these instructions from this passage that we have this morning. Moses is instructing Israel, and he says, "When you go to war against your enemies and see horses and chariots and an army greater than yours, do not be afraid of them, because the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt, will be with you. So do not be afraid, because." That's the part that stands out to me. Do not be afraid. Why? Because the Lord will be with you. This is just as applicable to us today as it was 4,000 years ago when it was written. It's a lot easier to say than to do, though. It's hard not to fear. As we were talking about before, I really do think fear is understandable and normal. There's a lot of our heroes from the Bible that were still afraid. I think David was afraid when he was fighting Goliath. I don't think he was, you know, fearless. I really do think he was afraid, but he knew that God was greater. I think, really, it's not so much about getting rid of fear. I think God knows. I mean, he knows that we have emotions. He created us with them. He created us to have them, to experience them. Fear, anger, and sadness, they're all emotions, and they're okay to feel them. We're not supposed to, you know, push them down, and yet we're still not supposed to let them control us, letting them prevent us from doing what God has called us to do. We're always supposed to let God overweigh those. God is greater than those fears. So don't let the fear cause you to push God down and disobey. This verse I just read mentioned the greater army, but other Bible translations actually change that to people more numerous. I think that is a helpful way for us to look at it. I think we should look at it that way. And if you replace it, it might make a little more sense today. When you look around at this country and the world in general, you see all this evil and people who are, you know, saying bad things about Christians, calling us names. Well, we have enemies for sure, but we need to be careful not to view the people so much as enemies. I think there's a lot to be said about seeing the forces behind them. Paul especially talked about the physical and spiritual battle that's waging all the time. He talked about we are not warring against flesh and blood, but against the powers of darkness, principalities, and all those demonic forces that are behind them. A lot of these people that we, you know, argue with, that, you know, look down on Christians and everything else, they're not the enemy so much as the forces that are behind them. They don't really know any better, a lot of them. So we need to be careful when we engage with people about calling them, you know, making them the enemy, because they're not. It's really about what's going on behind them. They might call us names like bigots and backwards and closed-minded, prudes, whatever. We need to remember that they're not the enemy. We need to remember who the real enemy is. The real enemy is Satan. And God is fighting that battle within us. God in us is fighting that spiritual war every day. And we have to decide whether we're going to partner with him, whether we're going to join him in this battle, or whether we're going to, you know, shrink back. So as we go out every day, we need to decide whether we're going to go out to battle or whether we're going to be like Israel and kind of shrink back in fear. As we go out every day, we need to remember the words that Moses told Israel. He said, "Do not fear, even if the people are more numerous." We're becoming a minority in this country, especially, and I think in our generation we really will be. We're going to see a split within the church. We already see it in some of the denominations, split over issues of holiness. You know, how serious are we about sin? I just had the other day, a couple weeks ago, I guess, Pastor Dave and I attended an online conference addressing LGBTQ issues in the church. And I mean, it's becoming a real issue. Our church especially is really told us that they think within the next, you know, decade or so, it might be even become illegal, you know, for us to hold the kind of positions that we do. And I really do think they're right. I think it's coming soon. And I think this is something we need to discuss right now, that, you know, are we going to go to war for God? You know, and not in a mean way, but are we going to stand for what he says? Or are we going to shrink back in fear and just let the world do what they want to do? I think in the near future, we're going to see a people more numerous than us. Just like in this passage. We see people with chariots and horses of our day. We have social media. We have books, movies, the law. We have powerful people, celebrities, you know, the chariots and horses of our day. They're going to come against us. Our passage says, when you go to war against your enemies and see horses and chariots and an army greater than yours, do not be afraid. Why? Because the Lord our God goes with us. He goes with us. It doesn't say he's going to take away all his problems. It never says that. Sometimes God does take away our problems. That's what we pray and we ask him to do that, and sometimes he does. But he doesn't always. It does say he goes with us always, though. He always goes with us. It says he would go with us. He'd be right in the midst of the battle with us. He'd fight for us. And his son, really, if we look at it, is already guaranteed our victory. He won the battle already. It's like fighting a war. I mean, any soldier would love to go fight a battle that you know the war's already won. You and I are doing the same thing. We're fighting a battle that's really been won already. We're just still called to engage in this fight that has been won. Jesus won the battle when he died and rose again for us. The enemy doesn't seem to know that, though, so they're trying to make as much of a mess as possible before they lose. So this passage really speaks of a people that are more numerous than us, and yet Moses reminds Israel, and I think he's reminding us, that we need to have courage because their God and our God is greater than all of them. The opposition to us will be far more than we can stand alone. So don't fight it alone. Remember that we have a God who is on our side. God has stated how we, his followers, are called to live. Never doubt that. Never doubt God's word in this book. Many people will call us names. They'll call us backwards and persecute us and seek to deceive us, especially. We see a lot of that going on today, don't we? A lot of deception. They have weapons of war, social media, politics, the news, celebrities, the law on their side, education, the list goes on. But we have God on our side. Jesus warned us in Matthew 25, verses 9 through 14, that trials and persecution would come our way. He says, then you will be handed over to be persecuted, to be put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate one another. Many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But to the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. So be prepared, he's telling us. Be prepared. It's coming. And it already is. We've already seen it throughout, you know, the last 2,000 years of history, but I think even more, we're going to see it again globally this time. The end is coming. And Jesus warns us to stand firm until the end. Those who stand firm to the end will be saved. We can take comfort in these words from Deuteronomy. I'm going to read Deuteronomy 3 through 5 again. Today you are going to battle against your enemies. Do not be faint-hearted or afraid. Do not panic or be terrified of them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies, to give you the victory. So God's the one that goes with us. Do not be terrified of losing friends, family, or of making people mad, or of the law even. Don't be afraid of those things. God is with us. No matter what happens, God is with us. God will give us the victory if we trust and obey him. God has called us to go to war every day. This war we have been called to fight is the same war the Israelites were called to fight in their day. They fought against flesh and blood, but unbeknownst to them, God was fighting a spiritual war behind the scenes. They were fighting against the powers of darkness that ruled Canaan, the demonic forces behind all these idols that Canaanites were worshiping. Today, God has still called us to fight this battle through the Holy Spirit that lives in us. God lives in us and uses us to help push back the darkness. But Jesus did warn us, didn't he? He didn't say it'd be easy. He said there would be persecution. He told us we'd be hated and that they would persecute us. So what should our response be? Should we persecute and hate people back? No. That's the way the world does things. We should use Jesus as our model. We see Jesus being the example of love and compassion towards people stuck in sin. He didn't see the people as the enemy, but he saw the demonic forces at work behind them. Jesus ultimately knew that they were not the enemy, but the powers of darkness are the enemy. Satan is the enemy. Jesus told us to love everyone and treat him and or her with gentleness, regardless of how they treat you. So when we correct people, we're called to be gentle in doing it. Don't hate them. Love them. We don't correct out of hate. We correct out of love. We are called to speak the truth in love against the demonic forces of the world. If we are silent in the face of sin, who will speak for God? If we don't speak up, who will? Nobody will. The only voices people hear in this world today are the voices of the enemy. We must be salt and light. We have to obey God and enter into this war he's called us to fight. We can't shrink back in fear. We can't fear what people will think or what they'll say. If they don't listen, at that point, it's not really your job anymore. Your job is to speak the truth, and if they don't receive it, they don't receive it. Jesus spoke about this when he sent his disciples out the first time. He said, if somebody doesn't receive you, in a certain town, shake off the dust from your feet and move on. Everyone is responsible for their own soul. So it's not as if it's blood on your hands if they don't listen. We are supposed to obey, though, and God did tell us to speak the truth. Maybe losing friends or a job or being made fun of or rejected is something you fear today. Don't let that fear keep you from speaking the truth. What are you going to do when it becomes a crime to become a Christian? It's already a crime in a lot of countries. When rejection is the least of our worries, and it's become something a lot greater, and it's a lot more difficult to be a Christian, what are you going to do? What happens when this church and many others are committing criminal action, and we may, you know, be on the wrong side of the law? What are we going to do then? Will we still go to war for God, or are we going to shrink back in fear? Will we be like the Israelites, or will we enter into the promise that God has given us? Who do we serve? Do we serve the government or do we serve God? These are questions that I ask myself, and I hope when the time comes, I will not do what I did in my Old Testament class. Hopefully, I will have enough courage to listen to God, because I know within myself I don't have enough. And I know that fear will overpower me if I don't rely on God. And I think all of us need to remember that we need to lean on God in those times. I'd like to challenge everyone to remind yourselves that you're engaged in a war every day. To remind yourself every day you go out into the world, you're participating in this spiritual battle that God has called us to fight. And you're also participating in victory. Like I said, the battle's been won. Jesus already won the battle. We're still called to go out and fight, though. God has charged us to proclaim his gospel to all nations as a witness. But we're supposed to do that in love. I'd like to close with a couple questions for us, for you to ask yourself. Will you go to God or go to war for God this week? What about next week? Are we going to do this every day? Will you join God in the spiritual war, or will you run away in fear? If we do, you might run the risk of being like Israel and having your greatest fears brought upon you anyway. Let's not run away in cowardice. Being in the military, I know it's pretty serious when people run away. In times of war, we actually punish that by death. That's really, really bad. And even in times of peace, it's like really bad prison sentence. So how much more do you think God takes it seriously if we run away and we shrink back from the mission he's called us to do? God dealt with cowardice very seriously. He killed off a whole generation of Israel for doing that. I don't want to be part of that, honestly. I don't think any of you guys want to either. So fortunately, we serve a merciful God, and he's patient with us. So if we mess up, it's okay. Just remember who you serve. I pray that all of us can be bolder, more loving, more gentle, and care enough to tell people the truth, even when it's difficult. I want to obey God, even if it's hard, because I don't want to be counted a coward. by God, and I don't want to be, you know, pushed out of His promises. So this week, let's go to war for God. Will you pray with me? God, this message was a difficult one to preach for me. I think it's hard for all of us because I know that I have not lived up to this a number of times. I think in the future, You're going to call us to a lot more than we've been accustomed to. We've had it pretty easy, honestly, in this country, and a lot of our brothers and sisters across the world are dealing with this on a daily basis. They're facing prison and death, and I ask that You would prepare us for that. You would remind us of what You've called us to, that You've called us to preach the truth to all nations and preach Your love and do it in love and gentleness and not hatred and condemnation, that we would show the love of Jesus, that we would model You as we do it. I pray that You would teach all of us to go to war for You. In Your name, amen.